Hello and welcome to the Conscious Parenting Paradigm Podcast. I'm your host, France Taillard, the HD Parenting Coach and Certified Conscious Parenting Coach. Today, you're listening to a special Conscious Parenting series, The Conscious Back to School. My desire with this series is to create more ease in your life, not only at the start of the school year, but for the entire year to come. You may find golden nuggets in here, some you already know and may have forgotten. Some are going to be brand new golden nuggets for you. I've interviewed various guests and together we shared our wisdom and had conversations to guide you and your child for the best school year to come. From sleep, nutrition, building resiliency, connecting with your child's teacher, and so much more. I've also created a special limited time offer for you, a mini human design reading, differentiated learning. This is a one-on-one offer, and it's all about guiding you to create ease with homework for your child through human design. Learning how your child is designed to digest information, their best environment for learning, to focus, structure, and so much more. Join me in exploring how we can ease this transition of back to school for ourselves and our children. Hello and welcome to today's podcast. Today we are continuing on our back to school series with Kathleen Gomes, Educational Consulting. Today we're going to be talking about advocating for play, speaking about kindergarten program and the expectations that schools have on children. So thank you for joining us, Kathleen.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm really excited to be here today.
Me too. I'm excited to have you. All right. So let's dive in. Tell me a little bit about, you know, how you can guide parents for this back to school, but not just back to school, but the whole school year in general. So should parents be concerned about, you know, their children being ready for school?
Yeah. So I love this question because I get that a lot, even at the beginning of the school, when we're just meeting the parents and families, they do ask this a lot. And I think it's really important to know, because I'm an advocate and I advocate for free play and lots of outdoor play, I think that one thing that parents are pressured to think, maybe because of other teachers or other parents that they know, they're so pressured to think that they need to learn, the kids need to learn these early academic skills. And they think that these early academics are what set them up for success later in life, when actually the research shows that it's actually play and free play, in fact, is what's important. So there's so many things that, you know, parents often come to me and ask, like, should they know all their numbers? How much, you know, how far should they be counting up to? And should they be writing all the letters of the alphabet? Or they'll even tell me things like, oh, they know the whole alphabet, the whole song. And I'm like, okay. But, and also reading and writing and writing their name. So they're worried about all these skills. But one thing that I tell parents, and I hope that it kind of gives them this peace of mind, is that, you know, kids have 2 full years in the kindergarten program to learn all these skills. They are important, but we want to enforce and promote those social emotional skills at the beginning. That's what's really important at the beginning, is to create those relationships with their friends and their teachers and with their own family members, like their siblings at home. We want to work on having the kids become good people and be kind to one another and show empathy. And we want to teach them, and they often teach me this actually, which is kind of funny, but we want to teach them to, you know, take turns. And at the beginning, what's so important is, and it's so overwhelming for them in September, is learning the classroom routines and rules. And also just learning about the different children that they're with every day. Some kids have never gone to formal schooling before. So these are the things that we want them to learn. And those other academic skills will come later on.
Perfect. And I love that. So you're an ECE, right?
That's right. Yes.
Okay, perfect. And yeah, so what you said there, there's a lot of golden nuggets there. And I feel like, you know, for parents that maybe didn't follow the online schooling last year and
Yeah.
they let their kids play, they can feel like, oh, my kid's behind. But no, the importance,
No.
like, kids learn so much through play. And this is a theme that's coming up over and
Yes.
over again in this podcast
Absolutely.
series.
Yeah.
Yeah, so just take a breath. You know, if they played and they didn't do everything that the curriculum needed them to do last year, it doesn't matter how old they are.
Yeah.
It is okay. It is okay. They're not behind, right? And
Exactly.
another thing that you said there was those social emotional skills. Well, one of the things that our children of all ages and us as adults had to really deal with the last year was those emotional skills, right? So,
Yes.
you know, there's a lot more things that are important beyond learning their numbers and their alphabet. That's all
Of
going to come.
course.
But there's
Yeah.
bigger life skills that we can teach our children as well that are just as equally important, if not more, right?
Of
So I love
course.
that you
And
brought that up.
yeah, and I love, sorry, I'm piggy said, I love that you mentioned. I even totally forgot because it was all a blur, the virtual schooling. I just went back to teaching virtually for the last 3 months. And it was like, you know, that mental health aspect is so important because, yeah, a lot of the kids weren't able to attend every day, and some of them didn't attend school because it was so difficult for the parents to manage that. And, you know, they were expected to sit in front of a screen for so long, and that's not ideal for anybody, not for us, not for them. So, it looked really, really different. And I hope that, from now, you know, moving forward, it will be in person and they'll have more of those interactions with other kids because that was completely missing and it wasn't fair to them.
Yeah, 100%. I agree. So, let's shift a little bit, but how
Yeah.
can so let or let's continue to talk a little bit more about play. So, how can parents teach their children through play? Like, what are the things that they can do that are easy at home?
Yeah, so like I said before, you know, things like teaching them how to write their name, that's okay, but they can do it in fun ways. So it's not like kill and drill and, you know, having them memorize things and flashcards and stuff. There's so many easy ways, like you said, that they can do that. So, for example, painting their name is a fun way because they're also learning to develop their fine motor skills that way, but also tracing their name in sand or using like colorful sand even, or using a salt tray and just tracing their name in that. So that way they're getting that fine motor that they probably wouldn't have when they start school because a lot of kids don't even know how to hold a pencil at that point, which is okay. So that's what they need. They need those experiences to be more hands-on so that eventually they develop that pincer grasp that they need to hold a pencil. But aside from that, from writing their name, there's so many ways that they can include the children in their everyday activities at home. So it doesn't feel like a chore or a challenge or an assignment. I don't like giving the kids homework in kindergarten. I don't believe in that. I don't believe in it in any grade, to be honest. But just incorporating math and literacy into their everyday lives and activities is a fun way, and it is learning. Like, for example, they can learn math when they're baking or cooking in the kitchen with their parents or their grandparents or whoever. And there's so many lessons learned in that as well because they all come from different backgrounds and ethnicity, sorry. So there's just so many life lessons that they can learn from that, and it's so much more meaningful than, you know, because they're learning measurement and they're learning sequencing and counting and all that. So it's so much more meaningful than, you know, whipping out the flashcards and telling them, like, you know, quick, what's 1 + 1? And I see that a lot with like 2 and 3 year olds, which is really concerning to me. So, and also like literacy, you know, they can go on letter scavenger hunts around the house and involve their siblings and go on walks out in nature. There's so many life lessons you can learn just from being outside and like hands-on lessons that they can, you know, they can use when they're digging and they're using sticks and rocks and just manipulating the natural environment around them. And playing outdoors is super important, especially for, you know, the last year and a half that we've had, that they've been sitting in front of screens most of the time and probably not knowing where to go because it wasn't safe to go anywhere. So being outside now is so important more than ever.
I agree. And we'll continue to talk about the outside plane a little bit, but what you said was so good, and I love that. And even just the pencil grab, I was the same at some point because my daughter, we got her to just completely skip JK. And at some point, I was like, you know what? I just want you to hold a pencil every day. I don't care if you're writing your name or what it is. If you're coloring, like, it doesn't matter to me. Like, I don't care what you're doing. I just want you to hold a pencil every day just to keep that up, right? But I love the tracing it with a paint or in the sand. I'll do that before the end of summer. And I find too with like we're so hard on ourselves. So even for me, like I was
Absolutely.
trying to give her a little bit more math skills and whatnot, but they do it naturally. And
Absolutely,
when
yes.
they want to add stuff up, they just do it and they're super into it. But when we force them, it's like, I don't want to do this right now, Mom.
Exactly. Yeah, it becomes like it's like an agenda that we have for them, and then and it will be like that when they do start school, but at least in kindergarten, while it is a play-based program, like we want to, just keep in mind that they are still little and they deserve open-ended, activities and free play, and they deserve to have choices and also think for themselves, which is what I love about it.
Yeah, I agree. And even for like the math skills, you know, a lot of people say baking. However, I find that sometimes it's hard to bake with little ones, like really like under 7, because their attention span is not there. So
It's true,
you can
yeah.
incorporate math even like, you know, in the morning I say I bake eggs or I cook eggs, and I'm like, you
Yeah.
know, how I want 2 eggs, how many do you want? She'll say one, and I was like, okay, well, how many do I need to take out then? You know, so little things like
Yeah,
that,
for
you
sure.
know, they don't crazy math skills, but they get to start to realize what it's all about. One thing, one resource that I've actually really loved over the last year was library programs. So they've had to pivot, and they've done, at least in the community I live in, they've done a really good job with like sending crafts home and sending scavenger hunts for like to get our kids outside and whatnot. So, you know, I'm sure they'll continue to do that. But so if you're like running out of ideas, just connecting with your library to see what they can provide for you.
Yeah, and I love that you said that because that was I had another interview, an Instagram live with the wellness center a couple weeks ago, and that's what I mentioned too, that the local library, you don't have to spend a ton of money to learn things, right? And to get connections and have resources to help you with learning and teaching your kids, because the public library, like you said, just has so much to offer. I feel like they have more for older kids. Well, my daughter's a baby right now, so there's not really much for her, but I feel
No.
like they have more for older kids. Like they even have like STEM programs and things like that, and some like drama and story time and things like that. So that's awesome if parents can connect with their local library. Like you said, that's a really great resource for them.
Yeah, I mean, I've always connected with the library since my daughter was at a young age, but
Yes.
during COVID, they really pivoted really well, and they offered online things and like you could stop by the library, pick up some stuff to bring home, and then you could do it with your child. So yeah,
Oh, that's
exactly. You don't have to
amazing.
spend a lot of money,
Yeah.
and it's really good. I love that.
That's amazing. Yeah.
So question for you. So you talked about how like the importance of playing outside with our children. How is that incorporated into the JK SK program, or is that because I know some schools have, does it depend on the school board, or what does that look like? Do you know?
I think it depends on the educators, to be honest. I know in
Okay.
kindergarten there's a kindergarten teacher, and then there's an early childhood educator, which is what my role is. And sometimes they often have other educators in the room too, if there are other needs in the classroom. But typically, it just depends on the educator team, to be honest. I know that I'm really passionate about being outdoors, so I try to get my students outside as often as I can. But we do have to technically be outside at least 2 hours a day. And I know that's the same for childcare. So kids who go to childcare, they have an hour outdoors in the morning and then in the afternoon again. And that's, of course, weather permitting. So if you know, it's above, I think in the winter time, the cutoff is minus 25 or maybe minus 20. I can't remember exactly, but that's when it's way too cold for them to go out. So they won't. And same with in the summertime, if it's an extreme heat alert like today, then they tend to not go outside, or at least not for as long. But it's important to note for parents as well, so that they can advocate for the kids, that the outdoor space, whether it's a schoolyard or the kindergarten play yard that they play in, that's an extension of the classroom. So the program is supposed to be extending outdoors as well. So sometimes when you see, you know, kids just running around and the teachers are kind of just standing there or talking to one another, that's not what it's supposed to look like. It's supposed to look like the teachers engaging and playing with the kids, and whatever they were learning inside, they can in fact bring outside. So if you have a basket of books, the children can sit in the shade and read a story or do story time outside. If the kids are interested in coloring or playing with bubbles, they can bring that outdoors as well. So the outdoor space is an extension of what is happening in the classroom, the type of learning that's happening inside as well.
That's interesting. Yeah. Cause as, mm-hmm. as a parent, definitely looking into that. So is that only for the JKSK program? It doesn't apply any other grades?
I'm not really too familiar with what happens in the other grades. I think that they get recess. So that's what it's called. It's recess time. So yeah, they just get free play and they get to run around and just blow off some steam. And that's often what we do too. We allow the kids to engage in free play. So it's their choice. They can go and run around. They can play hide and seek, or if we have a play structure at our school, we have one. They can play on the play structure, but there are also other things that they can bring outside from the classroom. And it's the opposite as well, vice versa. A lot of the classrooms are more natural now because we've noticed, and the research shows that, you know, nature is what calms children down, right? So it's really good for children who have, for example, autism or ADHD. Stress and anxiety to be outside. So bringing the outdoors into the classroom, like bringing different natural materials such as sticks and rocks and pine cones, leaves, it often helps. And I've seen a lot of teachers incorporate this into their classroom. So they'll their own money and things like plants and flowers and things just to make it feel a little bit more natural and give it a calming atmosphere so that the children can self-regulate and feel relaxed and calm.
Yeah, I was going to say, and that's really powerful. And more teachers, if that's part of the curriculum, more teachers should use that because 100% it helps regulate their emotions like nothing else being outside. So it's nice to know that that's incorporated into the younger grades at least.
Yes.
That's awesome. That's awesome.
Yeah, and I've seen it in older grades too. Sorry to cut you off. I have. It's just, like I said, it depends on the educators and the educator team. I've been lucky to work in schools where they really tap into the children's interests and their needs. And so I've seen even like a grade 4 classroom that really inspired me to do those things in kindergarten. So it just really depends.
Yeah, and I've seen it more than ever, I think, over the last year because they had to wear the masks and they had to do all these things that they tried to send them outside a little bit more so they could have the breaks and move their bodies more. So I would go to the park near a school, and yeah, they were outside at like times that they're not usually outside.
Yeah.
So it was really lovely to see. I love that.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So you talked about advocating for children, about, you know, making sure that they're outside, but how else can parents advocate for their children for them in school?
Yeah, so I also run workshops for families and for educators on advocating for the early years, especially in advocating for play, because although it is a play-based program, it's not always being run that way. Again, that depends on the educator teams. It doesn't matter what board it is. It just looks different amongst all the different boards, and it just depends on the team. So I try to work with ECEs on helping them to, you know, just change their environment and change their mindset. A lot of it is just this old school traditional thing that teachers can't let go of. And I'm seeing a big shift now. People are letting go a lot more, and they're running things properly in a way that, you know, we tap into the children's interests. And it's all about the holistic individual child. So we're planning a program for the individual needs and interests of the children. And I think that's something parents don't know yet. And I don't think they fully understand the program document. It's not a curriculum, it's a program. And I encourage all parents to go onto the ministry website and look at the document. I'm pretty sure you can either print it off or even get it sent to your home for free, if I'm not mistaken. It used to be that it was free, but I really encourage parents to at least take a look at it and skim it, because it is a lot of information and it can be overwhelming. But I want them to be familiar with what the program is. And also, a document that's really helpful is, I'm blanking on the name of it, but I believe it's something, how are children learning, or how does learning happen? That's what the document is. How does learning happen? And it's also an Ontario document. It should be on the website as well. And I really encourage parents to look at that and to kind of speak up if that's not happening in the classrooms. And also, I don't mean advocating in a way where they kind of, you know, march into the principal's office and create a scene or anything like that. Not at all. I don't even know if parents are allowed in the buildings anymore because of the whole pandemic. But I do advise parents to respectfully advocate, and as well as for educators to respectfully advocate for their own students and for their children. Because we are still seeing these old traditional practices that don't benefit the kids. They're doing a disservice to the children, and they're not learning that way. So we're telling them, you know, to sit crisscross applesauce, for example. We're telling kids to, you know, you can finish your work and then you can go play. Also, you know, don't shout out, or don't, you know, put your fingers on your lips and hands by your side in the hallway. And what we're doing is we're kind of raising robots that way. And I don't really like that. It just kind of, it's an old practice. It's not working. It doesn't work. And what I'm seeing now is a shift happening. So I want to be a part of that shift and just have parents be aware and have parents respectfully advocate. So one good example I had is a client of mine told me that her son was upset because his teacher said, you know, put away your snack because that's not healthy and take it home. And that didn't sit well with me, because I thought, you know, who are we to tell a child what is healthy or not healthy? And I'm a big believer and firm believer that parents are the most influential teachers in their children's lives. So if they're sending a snack or a lunch to school, that's because they know it's nutritious and they know it's what's best for their kids. So little things like that. I also advise for parents not to, you know, not to jump to conclusions and react automatically. We want to speak to our children about, well, why do you think that happened? And did it really happen that way? Like, let's walk me through it and let's talk about it. And then if you're still getting the same story, then I would respectfully, you know, speak to the teachers and have a phone conversation or in-person conversation if possible. Because then, you know, sometimes things get lost in translation or they get, you know, misunderstood. So things like that, I've seen it happen. It is possible. I've seen that happen, and I'm guilty of it myself. I've told kids, you know, put your snack away for later. That's, eat your healthy snacks first. And now I'm learning so much more and I'm evolving as an educator. So I know that's not appropriate. I want to respect, and I want to trust and respect in the relationships that I have with the parents that I work with as well. That's just one example, but yeah, I don't want parents to think that they're going in marching and, you know, starting a riot or anything like that. It's not about that. It's about respectfully speaking up for what is right and what is the best interest of the children in the classroom.
I love that. And just a funny side note about the, you know, healthy snacks first. If you're going to eat a certain amount of food in a day, does it really matter when it's consumed? I don't think right. It does. That's just my personal belief, you know.
Absolutely.
But, you know, because oftentimes, you know, my daughter's allowed two treats a day that, you know, they're very low sugar. And to me, it doesn't matter if she asks for it at 8 a.m. or 4 p.m. I kind of rather
Right.
her get it in the morning because then she can burn off the sugar and she won't be hyper for bedtime.
Yeah.
So, parents know their children well, like you
Absolutely.
said, and they know what's their best interest, and sometimes maybe that's all they can afford too, right?
Exactly. Yeah.
So I
Yep,
love that.
exactly.
So, and also, yeah, giving the teacher the benefit of the doubt. I love how you said, get your child to really walk you through and don't just jump the gun to being like, oh my
Right.
God, you did this, right? Because oftentimes, giving them the benefit of the doubt, maybe they didn't mean to have it come through in the way it did, or, who
Yes.
knows, right?
Yeah, for sure.
And then, so the first step then to advocate would be to communicate with the teacher. Or maybe the ECE, and then if that doesn't get resolved, then to, kindly, respectfully approach the principal. Is that what I got from you?
I think so. I think there's
Okay.
nothing wrong with that. I would, send them an email, shoot them an email and see what they would advise. But yeah, I don't think there's anything wrong with it. But I do think I suggest, speaking to the educators first for sure, because they are the ones who are in the classroom with the kids all day. And like I said, it could just be something that was misunderstood. And also another like quick little example is, if children, like I said before, they're being expected to sit crisscross applesauce, but your child is really rambunctious like mine. I already know she's going to daycare and she's not going to be able to sit still. I hope that's not an expectation because that's not developmentally appropriate. So I advocate a lot for developmentally appropriate practice and why do we have certain expectations for the kids, sitting down if they're really they just need to burn off steam and energy, like you just said. And if they learn by moving their bodies, then why do they have to sit a certain way? Why can't they sit with their legs like out a little bit, or you know what I mean, or even lie down? Or if they're listening and they're learning and they're being engaged and they're having fun, then that's all that matters. So, and I think that they are learning when they are given that choice and the freedom to move freely, I guess is what I'm saying. So, there are many ways to respectfully advocate and speak up for your children. And I know some, like my husband and I, we talked about, we have different rules at home than we have at school, but it's still what's about appropriate and what's right for the kids.
I agree. And everyone is different. Everyone is unique. What works for one doesn't work for the other. So having that one
Exactly.
size cookie cutter doesn't
Yeah.
really work. And just, it goes back to we work so hard to get them to talk and to get them to walk. And then the
Yes.
rest of their life, we tell them to sit
To
down and
shut
shut
up, right? Yeah,
up.
exactly. I just heard that. I don't know if that was one of your things that you shared or somebody just shared that recently.
Yeah, somebody did. It wasn't me.
Yeah. I thought like, yes, that's so true. It's so brilliant. And I know we all have those days as parents too, where we're like, oh my goodness, like, do you ever stop? But at the end of the day, yeah, we do want that because they're learning the more that they're talking. And I even heard something about, how this was another parent coach. I don't know if it was you, but just encouraging kids to say no is really important too. And I didn't really think of it that way until I was like, oh, that's a really neat perspective. Like they have to learn to say no to us, and we have to learn to accept that and to take it.
Yeah, it's all about boundaries, right?
Yeah.
If we just say yes to people please, then we're not
Yeah.
actually allowing other people to know us for who we are. Yeah. So it's a really powerful, beautiful thing to teach our children,
Yeah,
boundaries and
it's true.
effective communication. Yeah.
For sure.
Well, this was lovely. You mentioned that ministry website program. What was the name of the program? Do you
So I'll have to probably send that to you, but I know
Okay,
that the
we'll put it in the
ministry,
show notes.
yeah, the Ministry of Education has the program document for the kindergarten program. And then the other document, I'm sure if you Google it, but I'll send it to you. It is How Does Learning Happen, is what it's called.
Perfect. So we'll put those two things in the show notes if you want to, check it out. That'll be perfect. All right. So do you have a one last tidbit that, the key takeaway you want our parents to take with them today?
There are some things that you can do to prepare the kids for school, like labeling everything. That's really important. And label everything and ensure that they're toilet trained if possible. That's super, super important. Those are things that we do want the kids to have before they start school. But other than that, like you said, just take it easy on yourself. Don't put too much pressure and enjoy this journey, because it is a big deal when sending your little one off to school. So enjoy it.
It is. It is. I've just been able to stop crying every time I think about it. So
I know. I know. Well, thank you. Feel.
Yeah. Thank you so much for joining us, Kathleen.
Thank you very much for having me.
Thank you so much for listening to the Conscious Parenting Paradigm Podcast. I am your host, France Taillard, Certified Conscious Parenting Coach. You can find me on Instagram or TikTok at Coach France T. You can find my link to my website in the show notes or on my social media profiles. I would love it if you would subscribe to and rate this podcast. I will be doing multiple Ask Me Parenting episodes, so if you have any questions for me, please leave it inside a review on your favorite platform. Your feedback and support is so appreciated. See you next time, where we will continue to explore conscious parenting together.